This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
The young shining cuckoo is fed by its foster parents on insects and spiders. But the korimako, or bellbird, has a much more interesting diet of nectar. It's been something of a radio personality and has sung on shortwave radio to Australia and the Pacific nations for 30 years. However, the early recordings failed to reflect the versatility of the bellbird, with its wide variety of liquid notes and artistically placed clicks and bell-like sounds. It's not surprising that Maori mythology describes korimako, the bellbird, as the messenger of tane, sent to herald the coming of the sun.
Community or chaos? We can construct and nurture community or fall into chaos. Over the next hour, Marvin Hubbard hosts conversations toward creating a fairer, more equal society.
Community or Chaos is made possible with the support of Quakers Aotearoa. You'll find them online at quaker.nz.
Good morning, friends. Today we have with us Neil Johnston, who's an investigative engineer and specializes in hydrodynamics and analyzing the causes of floods and probabilities and solutions, and a supporter of the South Dunedin Stormwater Justice Group. Good morning.
Hello, Marvin. Thanks for having me.
Neil, you made a long submission to the City Council some years ago, and you also on South Dunedin's proneness to flooding and lack of adequate stormwater and other appropriate infrastructure. And you have also written a professional report for South Dunedin's vulnerability to flooding. Could you talk about why you got interested in South Dunedin's repeated flooding?
Yes, sure, Marvin. Well, firstly, it's my field of expertise. Secondly, I'm Dunedin born and bred.
Do you live in the area?
No, I live on the peninsula. Not a huge distance above sea level, but long enough to, to survive the next 300 or 400 years, I think. So I've always been involved in flood issues, and some of the attitudes to flooding and so on, and bureaucratic resistance to spending on it, I think. But I got interested in South Dunedin specifically. My late wife and I were in Europe at the time. We were driving across eastern Turkey, and I got some emails about the flooding that was currently taking place in June of 2015. And I was amazed that much flooding could occur there. And I made some inquiries via email while I was still overseas, and got information back as to what the rainfall figures were and so on that created that event. And from my knowledge of hydrology and storm regulations and stormwater regulations and so on, I was adamant that that storm or that flooding simply should not have happened. And 10 years on, or 11 years on, that's still my view.
Go ahead.
Carry on.
What is the South Dunedin Stormwater Justice Group?
Okay, well, it's a small group that the flood events brought us together. Again, heightened by my ongoing interest in what was happening and what wasn't happening, more particularly in terms of solutions, and reading the plight of people like Lynn Newell, who is the leader of our small group, and encouraged by others like Julian Dury, who's an engineer not quite as old as me, but almost, and with a similar career path or parallel career path. We started investigating and questioning and gathering support, and we found it an extraordinarily rewarding process in a sense, but also extremely frustrating because to be quite honest, we get obstructions put in our path at every opportunity from City Hall. Yeah, let's not pretend that's not the case.
Okay. Could you talk about your submission to the City Council concerning South Dunedin's flooding, and then talk about the report you made for the South Dunedin Stormwater Justice Group?
Yeah, sure.
Take your time with that.
Yeah, thank you. I've made a number of submissions to the DCC. The most recent, particularly relevant ones, the first one goes back to the middle of 2024, when on the back of quite a bit of analysis I had done of rainfall data and stormwater outflow data, it became obvious to me that the area that the South Dunedin stormwater system is required to drain, that's the roofs of buildings and the roads and the car parks and the super car parks of Pack and Save and Mitre 10 and all those places, that area is much greater than it was back in the day when the system was designed, and that was back in the very late 1950s.
In other words, you've got more surface that's not grass and gravel, but concrete, cement, and road pavement.
100%. And by my calculations, the area, that type of area that the system now has to drain has almost doubled over and above the design expectation, and that means that instead of being able to handle a rainfall intensity of about 14 and a half, I think the design figure was, millimeters per hour, the system now struggles to handle 8, and by far the main reason that South Dunedin floods.
This happens because of new businesses and new homes and subdivisions, doesn't it? Because you put in more concrete and asphalt.
Yep.
And you have to have permission to build.
Yes.
By the local body government.
Yes.
And doesn't it seem practical to either limit the amount of concrete and asphalt you can put on, or else make sure you're building your infrastructure to handle it at the same time?
I mean,
you could probably have more buildings with a surface that's soluble, the surface that'll let water through, couldn't you?
We can.
That's probably takes more ingenuity and doesn't look as smart, but it's possible, isn't it?
It is. I'm going to go back and answer your original question more fully, but just on that side of it, new builds in many places in similar, tight conditions in terms of high development. A lot of new buildings in enlightened cities will be required to install storage tanks and that sort of thing, so that the stormwater doesn't run off directly into the system. It gets stored until the rain ceases and that water can be released. But going back to the issue of the overall impermeability of how it happened, up until the 1960s, South Dunedin drained by natural channels, predominantly to the Otago Harbour. It was a gravity drainage system, and it worked well enough. Around the mid-century, the 20th century, the Otago Harbour Board, now Port Otago, decided that it would like to reclaim a large chunk of the Upper Otago Harbour, an area known as the Southern Endowment. And that reclamation over time...
Where is that geographically?
Geographically, that is essentially now the area between Anderson's Bay Road and Portsmouth Drive. In other words, between Anderson's Bay Road and Portsmouth Drive. up until then, that was just wet or boggy land, and a full time it was just
wetland,
a full time
sort of.
Indistinguishable from the rest of the harbour. Included in the drainage system then was what they call a half tide system. I won't go into the details of that, but that enables the area that the natural drainage that drains into stays at a lower level than across the board than the rest of the harbour. It's a little bit of simple engineering. Anyway, when that reclamation took place, it not only destroyed all that natural drainage's ability to access the harbour, but they also took out the half tide system. And they knew they were doing that, and they knew it would have an impact. So they installed a pump system, being a solitary pump station on Portobello Road at the end of Otaki Street. They engaged in some, unenlightened engineering decision-making, whereby they produced a pump station that could handle about 6,500 or 6,300 litres per second, so 6.3 Qmex. They knew, because I've studied the documentation, that based on the current layout of the land and rainfall projections, the more logical figure or more responsible figure was something over 9 Qmex. But they clipped that back. And part of the reason they felt comfortable in clipping it back was they also knew that the existing pipework in South Dunedin couldn't even deliver the 6.3 Qmex. So they installed a system that was marginal or less than marginal way back then. And that was completed in 1964, and South Dunedin got its first flood in 1968. In the reporting, there was a statement that says if South Dunedin floods, it won't be the fault of the pump station, it'll be the fault of the inland pumps, because the inland pipes, because they're not big enough anyway. That's the situation today. Nothing's changed. Well, nothing's changed in the infrastructure, but something's changed massively in the catchment, which, as I said before, the surface that requires to be drained has almost doubled. So we have a massively under-designed and underperforming system brought about primarily by catchment change. And I'm afraid to say that the Dunedin City Council, City Hall, is a catchment change denier.
Now, why did they want to change the shape of this, of the Portobello seashore wetlands? Did they want to build there?
Or? Yes. Yeah, and they have. All that area where, the Bunnings and the Mitre 10 and the Nichols Gardens and everything, car sales yards, et cetera, et cetera. Light commercial land. It was seen as, providing an economic boon for the city, and it was also a place for the harbour board to deposit spoil from its enlarging of the Victoria Channel in the harbour. So it was seen as a win-win situation, and Port Otago now is the owner of superseded the harbour board, gains a lot of income because it still owns the land, most of the land, and it has a sizable income from land rentals in the area. And of course, as we know, Port Otago is owned by the Otago Regional Council.
Except for Mosgiel and the Otari Plains, Dunedin doesn't have a lot of flat land. So I suppose that much of the flat land that's available is subject to flooding and sea level, possibly.
Well it's undeniably subject to flooding because we can't deny that it's flooded significantly. I'm talking about South Dunedin significantly in the last little while.
What do you suggest in your submissions to the City Council?
Well, when I wrote my submission in 2024, it wasn't part of a formal submission process. It was just here's some interesting information that you should be taking
that
on
was
board.
Fairly full.
Well, that one was reasonably so. Yeah, if I say so myself, it's quite detailed and difficult to argue against. So I sent that to all 14 councillors. I sent it to the mayor, the then mayor, and I sent it to the chief executive. And not one of those 15 or 16 people, is it, responded on the content. And that's about typical.
I won't name the person, but one of the councillors suggested I talk to you. And also, what's the other man that's been working on this?
Julian Dury.
The person suggested that I interview both of you starting a couple of years ago.
Yes. Both Julian and I have
So it means that at least one person was sympathetic to your points of view.
Oh, you might have been sympathetic. Why I should say they, because we don't know who that was. You may have been sympathetic, but didn't respond.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and don't get me wrong. I'm not saying every councillor is blind to the issues or whatever, but a lot of councillors are relatively new. Very few of them were there in 2015.
Yeah.
And I promise you, a lot of them have been fed some very, very false information.
Okay, what did you suggest that the – what work would you have liked to have seen when you wrote those?
What I would like to see is an upgrading of the stormwater system, which includes pipes and pumps effectively, that restores the drainage standard that was intended to be applied in the start of the 1960s. So I would like to see the stormwater system upgraded so that it can keep rainfalls of up to 14 millimetres per hour out of people's properties and up to 19 or 20 millimetres per hour out of people's houses.
Where would that – would that start in the Kaikoura Valley?
No, it would start just talking about the Kaikoura Valley. What comes through from the Kaikoura Valley through the Karisham Tunnel is predominant. Well, it's the problem is that we have a wastewater system that brings sewage through from the Kaikoura Valley and sends it all the way to the Tahuna wastewater plant. And at times of heavy rain, an amount of stormwater gets into that wastewater pipe, which is almost inevitable. And that volume within the pipe, a mixture of wastewater and stormwater, floods some areas of South Dunedin. That isn't a massive volume in terms of flood heights.
It would be very annoying if you were a householder.
Oh, it is slightly annoying having that stuff ruining your house. Yes, absolutely, and it's a massive health issue, and right at the, and again, DCC have promised on two or three occasions this issue. You can go back in the newspapers, you'll find this issue raised 20 years ago, and about every 5 years, DCC comes up with a promise that they're going to divert that wastewater to the Green Island treatment plant, and it just doesn't happen. But what would I do about South Dunedin being restored to having an equitable flood standard? Well, you have to increase your pipes and pumps, and the most obvious one, and it's been promoted by councils, consultants from time to time, most particularly by Opus back in 2017, and that was to split the catchment in two, so that the existing pump station only serve half the area, and the new station, which would discharge into the ocean, somewhere in the vicinity of Forby Park, so it would run east west across. So that requires pipes and pumps. It's not my job to design the system because I don't have all the information and I have no wish to. But that is a sensible option. There will be others with more pumps and stations, but you have. There's no real option to keep South Dunedin dry, other than to increase its ability to get the water off the land.
Now, can you tell me about the Opus report and who is Opus?
Right, Opus. I think they might have been swallowed up as a consultancy and operate under a different name now, but they were a major New Zealand consultancy, engineering consultancy predominantly, with offices all over New Zealand, including a smallish one here in Dunedin. But they were engaged by the Dunedin City Council at least as far back as 2010, and in 2011 they produced a preliminary sort of report on Dunedin catchments, including South Dunedin. Much more recently, they did quite a lot of work for DCC. In 2017, they produced a report that recommended just that option that I mentioned, splitting the catchment and a new main pipe and a new pumping station. That was their recommended option. It was the second most successful in terms of reducing flood risk. The option that would have done an even better job was basically to replace everything, all the pipes, all the pumps, and put in new ones. And they rated that as unaffordable. That's an opinion, I guess. But the split catchment new pump station option was recommended by Opus to City Council in 2017.
Did that happen?
Nothing happens. No, to my knowledge, the report didn't see the light of day.
Why do you think there was no action on this?
I think part of it is the malaise, if you like, that's overtaken the whole of New Zealand and probably a lot of other municipalities around the world, in that underground services, stormwater, wastewater, and so on, are not particularly sexy. That they don't attract votes, and in issues like flooding and so on, you've always got that little bit of hope. You've got your fingers crossed behind your back that we won't have an event while you're in power. So I think that's the first thing. But specifically to South Dunedin, I think I can understand why things weren't built better in the 1960s. I think that was economic. It may have been classist. We'll come back to that shortly. But the period of real worry is that since the flood of 2015. Right? The first reaction of the city council then, and most, you know, led vociferously by its mayor, was that we weren't responsible for flooding. The system worked really well, and it took almost a year to demonstrate the truth of that, and then the next excuse was that it was caused by groundwater levels induced by rising seas, and that was equally nonsensical, but it started to stick, and then it morphed into a narrative that South Dunedin's flood issues were all down to climate change. So we can talk about climate change. That's not our fault either. Hopefully we can get government assistance if we do something. In the meantime, while the discussions take place, nothing gets done, nothing gets spent, and rates pressure doesn't get a further boost from that.
Would a new pumping system be more worthwhile than the Foresight Stadium?
Or George Street? Don't forget, George Street was done on a pretext of urgent infrastructure works. Yes, I wasn't a favourite. I mean, I was until the game changed, an avid rugby supporter. And I used to go to Carisbrook, from the time I was about 10 to the time I was about 50, virtually every Saturday. I personally have no particular interest in going to the stadium, but it was always a questionable economic decision in my view. But that money's sunk.
I'm thinking about priorities.
Oh well, yes, of course, And in fairness, I suppose in 2008 when the stadium, became adopted, the plan, flooding and stormwater flooding in South Dunedin wasn't a huge issue. The 2015 flood was still 5 or 6 years away.
Yeah.
Yes, priorities are interesting. As I say, George Street is possibly the better comparison. Not so much whether or not the outcome justifies the expenditure, but one of the key justifications for doing it was we have to dig up George Street anyway to fix the infrastructure. Therefore, we might as well do the rest. Well, I would have thought George Street's infrastructure was massively. Inferior or subservient to that of South Dunedin.
Do you think if this had been occurring in Waverley or Murray Hill, it would have had the same results?
it's hard to know. I suspect that South Dunedin and South Dunedin residents are treated somewhat disparagingly by elements within the council. I recall you had an interview with then Councillor Jim O'Malley, who I think was one of the better councillors, and certainly one of the better councillors in terms of trying to get something done on South Dunedin. Jules Reddick was perhaps the other. And Jim referred to classism, and I won't argue with Jim on that.
Now, Isn't all this partly also a result of the economic ideology that's happened in the world, particularly in New Zealand, whereas all of a sudden taxes since the 80s have been a bad flavor? We're not willing to raise taxes for health care, for infrastructure, for education, and we're surprised when things fail.
Absolutely. Yes, you can't... You can't walk away from your key roles just because they're a bit expensive. They've always been expensive, and you've always got relatively expensive, and you have to find ways to pay for them. And
the magic of the market was supposed to do that. But I'm not sure it has. I'm not superstitious, of course, so I question this.
You're not going to pretend for a moment that electricity prices have gone up. they were going to come down with a thump, weren't they? As I recall, I've lost my thread. The other contributor to the fact that things aren't getting done is that with the local government reforms in the late 1980s, I think, councils, as part of that same economic philosophy, councils all over the country, almost without exception, possibly totally without exception, got rid of all their expert staff in terms of engineering and
Warri
and so
Falls.
On.
Yeah, the electricity is the same thing.
Yeah. And
followed the government. The government got rid of the Department of Public Works.
Yes, Ministry of Works.
We don't need public work anymore.
No. We can get Australians to build our hospital. That's worked well. That kind of thing. And in the case of Dunedin City Council, Works Department, Drainage, and so on, all those people got made redundant. Most of them, if they didn't retire straight away, most of them went into local consultancies, and they took their expertise there. And for a while, that was sort of a seamless transition because the expertise was still there. But as those people, retired totally, moved on, or worse, the expertise and the chain of experience was totally severed. And our councils here, both the ECC and the Otago Regional Council, rely almost totally, or nearly totally anyway, on outside consultants. And quite often, almost again, extensively on outside Dunedin consultants.
One of the things that I've heard of an acquaintance of mine who works in government said was that they said that contracting out destroys institutions because you lose institutional memory, you lose institutional expertise, so you can no longer do what you were doing before. And the contractors are always temporary. They give you advice, and they probably are paid more per advice than if the institution had the expertise to find their own advice. But then they walk away, and next time you don't have the expertise to make decisions.
That's 100% correct, and certainly 100% my view. In my case, I'm 75. I'll probably sound 95, but and I'm as far as Ketchum Board Regional Council type activities are concerned, I'm just about the last link with the corporate, internal corporate knowledge or in-house technical knowledge. I'm just about the last link that exists, and I could be subbed off at any time.
Could you train people?
Oh, I did. Yes, up to a point. I mean, I wouldn't be only training them in the technical side of things, but it would be in the historical side of things because I have that and people, you know, of my age and experience have that real experience of what actually happened and where it happened and so on. So I'd be able to train technically to a degree. I'd like to think I could train on the ethics of being an engineer. But as to whether or not I'm much of a teacher, I did do a little bit of teaching at the Polytech on these sort of things, and I never found that that was my bent, to be perfectly honest.
It seems to me in all these issues, the chickens are coming home to roost after 30 years.
Yeah, they are, but the trouble is...
Trouble with 30 years, you lose a generation.
Yep, and more, yes. And while the chickens are coming home to roost, the victims aren't the people that caused it.
Well, the people that, with the ideology, had to be responsible for the losses.
it would be the decision making would be different if that were the case, I think.
So, what should happen now?
In terms of South Dunedin, we need to get a proper system. There needs to be, instead of these three options that are, you know, knocking over anything from.
Do you think that climate change and the immediate flooding problem should be separate issues?
Absolutely. And they're both issues. You know, I've been designing and recommending, flood designs and so on, you know, since well before the turn of the century. And they always took into account the potential issues of climate change. So you have to do that. But to pretend that South Dunedin flooded in 2015 and 2024 because of climate change, or that if it floods again next year or even tomorrow, that'll be because of climate change, is totally fallacious. So we need to deal with both. Climate change is an issue, clearly. If you get, you know, for an argument's sake, a meter of sea level rise, then that impacts on South Dunedin, and you do two things, I suppose. You walk away, or you stop the water getting in, and plenty of societies around the world have done that with much greater differentials in land and water levels than we're facing here.
The Netherlands has quite a bit more wealth than we have. They also have. They may have a different attitude toward taxation and government spending.
They might. Yeah, I don't disagree. But if it comes down to economics, it will be certainly much cheaper to keep the water out than to shift than to shift 1,500 people to God knows where. Yeah, plus everything else.
Then
when I say 1,500, that wouldn't be the comparable figure.
If you have a dramatic rise in sea level, how would you keep the water out? I mean, I can imagine. I mean, we could certainly keep the water out the way things are now, and certainly, I would think the pumping system should be immediately increased and renewed. But after you've done that, where do you go?
One of the risks, I think, is. I mean, we have to be aware of, you know, what might happen. Now, when you say a dramatic increase in sea level, you know, what do you mean by that? Do you mean a meter or 5 meters?
A couple of meters. Okay. Anyway.
Compromise.
I mean, I'm no expert.
Yeah, no, of course.
I mean, actually, even the scientists are guessing. But
yes.
The one thing is fairly clear is that we haven't done enough to mitigate climate change. The other thing is fairly clear is that the scientists are actually getting more worried because of feedback when you know, glaciers are melting faster than expected and certain other things that indicate the problem are happening faster than maybe expect it.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with any of that, but none of that changes the narrative that, you know, 15,000 people or whatever it is, probably a bit less, let's say 13,000 people currently live in South Dunedin. They're going to be living there for the rest of their lives and longer. What might happen in 21, 26, making it around 100 years, isn't the issue for them, right? And it's the city council that has a duty of care to those people, and it's not exercising it. In terms of what might, you know, getting justifiably concerned about what might happen by 2026 and people then, I also sort of encourage people to think, well, what would we think now of people back in 1926 making plans for us now? Because so much is going to change. I mean, not just climate, and that might be better. That might be worse than is being predicted. It might be a bit less. I don't know. And neither does anyone else. But solutions that we can't envisage now could be commonplace in 40 years' time. I don't know.
Would you suggest that we fix the present pumping system now, and then, if that was done, would you still be opposed to planning for what happens if climate change gets much worse?
I'm not opposed to planning. Firstly, that should definitely happen. The get stuck in and fix it. Solution.
I guess my argument is that the two shouldn't be contradictions. You shouldn't. If you do the one, doesn't mean you shouldn't do the other, and vice versa.
No, 100%. And that's been another problem with the South Dunedin Futures initiative, is that it has stymied development of, you know, the solutions that are needed now. It's unashamedly come up with this policy that they self-titled "No Regrets." In other words, we mustn't put in pipes and pumps because that might not fit in with our climate change adaptation policy, you know, which to me is an extraordinary attitude, which says, you know, we're more interested, or we say we're more interested in the well-being of people in by 2080 or 2126 or something than we are with the people now. So, but yes, but both are both are real issues. But it seems to me you should be dealing with the one that's happening now in advance of the one that, you know, may very well happen in the future. Because the other thing, you know, let's not pretend otherwise. When you look at these three options that have been released just in the last week or so, there's a great deal of reshaping that catchment or that area, that suburb, from what it is now into some sort of green in terms of vegetation and so on, and blue in terms of internal water, little piece of Florida or something, and there's a worry that there's more intent on the aesthetics or the returning to some semblance of nature, and there's no argument that, you know, the natural system there has been destroyed, you know, in the last 200 years, but there seems to be a parallel desire to do that. Most of which has absolutely nothing. You know, most of that contributes absolutely nothing to flood safety. Okay.
Have you read the three different?
I don't think anyone's read them all.
Okay.
I've I've spied vid, you know, to get the bases of what are proposed, and I can see absolutely nothing in those reports. I can see nothing in those reports that justifies knocking over 1,500 houses.
What's the difference between the three? With
they're in degrees of what do you call it, disruption to the existing situation. They all have varying degrees of infrastructure and modification of the environment and and relocation of houses. You know,
their timeline?
Oh, it's I'm not quite sure when anything's supposed to start. Goodness knows when anything's supposed to start, but this stuff is supposed to continue over the best part of a century, and that to me is simply unacceptable. There's a statement in the ODT. Let me get this right. Let me go back. There was a statement made by Mr. Rowe, the leader of the South Dunedin Futures thing, to a council meeting last September. And he said then that the expectation was that there wouldn't be large scale evacuation of houses or people until beyond 2100. Yeah, there'll be a few floods. There'll be a few floods before 2100.
So the real issue right now is why they aren't renewing the stormwater piping and pumps.
Yeah, and that's been the question. You know, why wouldn't you be? Because I don't know if you read, there's a letter in the paper for me this morning. I don't know if you've seen that, because I challenged the DCC via an official information process to state what they've done in capital works in South Dunedin since the 2018 annual plan, and I pointed out the fine, because DCC responded and they claim to have spent $6.6 million since 2018, but when you look at what they say the capital works are, it's immediately obvious they haven't spent a cent, and yet somehow or other this proposal is being railroaded. You're having senior politicians, and I think the chief executive, forgive me if I'm misquoting here, saying, you know, we need to get acting on this, you know, right now. We've got to crack on. That's the rallying cry.
Crack on with the futures plans, or crack on?
Crack on with the one of these three options.
Would you be so opposed to the options if they were already fixing the pumps and doing the flood prevention work right now?
Well, if they had fixed the pumps, there wouldn't be a pretext for doing this. And the only justification that's being presented for these options is for flood safety, you know, long term flood safety. They're not stating that they're doing it because they want to reinvent a suburb in their, you know, in their own image.
I've read letters to the paper, but I haven't heard any real discussion of this in the paper or in the public media, of the fact that there's inadequate conventional pumps and so on for the flooding.
No, well,
I mean, it's
no, you don't. You've read my report.
Yeah, I'm not just disagreeing with you.
No, I'm saying that. Yeah.
That's not become a public issue.
No,
but in the way it might.
You have it's quite difficult for some topics to become a public issue in this town at times. Marvin, that report has been sent to the Otago Daily Times. Okay, probably how long ago? Almost 3 weeks ago now, I think. And also to one or two of the reporters. I mean, the ODT, you know, prints some quite good stuff, but wouldn't you think the ODT might have acknowledged receipt of it by now? So you know, so when you say you don't see much publicity to this,
well, there isn't a public discussion on the pumps and the inadequacy at the present.
And again, and a key reason for that will be because in all the sham consultation process that has preceded this stuff on South Dunedin Futures, nobody told the public the facts about the existing system and why it is. No one said a major part of your flood problems are caused by catchment change. No one said that. Instead, people were invited for a cup of tea and a bun and told about a wonderful thing that we're doing in relation to stopping the threat of climate change.
I'm not sure, but I suspect that some people won't be too that live in South Dunedin won't be too happy with the prospect that their children may have to move.
They're not too happy the prospect that they may have to move, or that the inheritance that they were intending to leave to their children from the house in South Dunedin is just taken a hit. But you don't have to suspect that. That's an absolute reality. I know that some of our more rational and concerned councillors are fielding enormous numbers of complaints. I've had to tell a couple of people, good friends of mine who have lived in the area for donkey's years, that guess what, your house is earmarked for acquisition at some point. That's not a nice thing to wake up to. And the council didn't even have the empathy or the guts to inform those people first before it informed national media and insurance companies.
That's one of the issues that we don't have a lot of time left.
But
one of the issues is the government has already said that they're not going to subsidize or help with the insurance. And the insurance company is saying they're on land that's threatened by flooding. They're no longer able to afford to insure people.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Jonathan Boston has been saying is that they should set up an insurance, government insurance set up so that people that own property, I'm not talking about large businesses that own a thousand houses, but I'm talking about ordinary homeowners should in some way be protected financially.
Yes, and that's
and that's not happening either on a nationwide.
It would be nice to see. It would be great to see that happening. I certainly recognize how expensive that can be. Jonathan's got a really good holistic view, I think, unlike many on that issue. He doesn't have the answers, and that's not criticizing. It's very, very difficult.
But part of the answer, of course, is that in places like Denmark and the Netherlands, why these insurance or is it a plan by the government and partially subsidized by the users of the insurance?
Yes.
So, it's not impossible.
No.
And if you have that kind of cooperation, it's going to be a lot cheaper than if you don't do anything.
100%. Of course, we're talking the the difficulties of how climate change and climate change damage or climate change damage can be funded or people can be insured, let's say. But we're talking about that in the general terms, I think, because I do want to come back to South Dunedin, which right at the moment isn't a climate change.
I know the
victim of
floods are because you have inadequate.
Yeah. So that aspect, those people there shouldn't necessarily be treated. Well, they definitely shouldn't be treated as if they are currently climate change victims.
Do you think
they could become so?
You think South Dunedin people are going to be asking the right questions? I've only got about 1 minute.
Yeah, I promise you they are. Yes, there you go. I'll give you an absolute guarantee that they are going to be asking some very, very hard questions very, very soon. And in fact, they're doing it now. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot for coming on board and taking part.
You're welcome. It was good timing, the schedule, this, wasn't it? But I wish it weren't the case.
Okay, thanks a lot. We've been talking with Neil Johnson, an engineer, talking about flooding in South Dunedin.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.